This is Heal Planet. I'm Alan Combs, and I'm delighted to welcome Crystal McVeigh. She had a book out called Waking Up in Heaven. Now she's written a sequel called Chasing Heaven. And it's a fascinating look at someone who says they spent 9 minutes dead and in the process met God. Crystal, nice to talk to you again.
Hi, Alan. Nice to see you or talk to you again.
I wish we could see each other. This is an audio medium. Let's just give some background here in terms of who you are and what your faith walk was until the event we're about to talk about happened.
Sure. I was born and raised in a small town in southwest Oklahoma. I grew up, became a school teacher. I was married, had 4 children. I just lived the quote-unquote normal life until December 10th, 2009. I had gone into the hospital for a routine procedure. I was scheduled to be home that evening. And I say that everything that could have possibly gone wrong ended up going wrong. I woke up with pancreatitis, and they put me in the hospital. And 2 days later, I went into respiratory arrest and died.
Were you a faithful person, a religious person up until this point?
So I grew up in the heart of the Bible Belt. And the question isn't if you went to church, it was what church did you go to? In my little town. And so I went to church my entire life from the age of 3 on, even until, you know, the day I died. The problem was is that as a child, I had walked through some pretty difficult things. I was sexually molested from the age of 3 to 12. And during that period, I would sit in church and I would listen to them talk about this Jesus that would save me. Well, when you're 8, and these kind of things are happening to you, you want him to save you from what's happening. And so I ended up being baptized 4 separate times before I was 12. And I can remember after the 4th time thinking, you know, why doesn't he love me? Because in my mind, and I grew up without a father in the home, my stepfather was extremely abusive and at one point even tried to take my life. And I can remember at 12 thinking, you know, why doesn't God love me? Because if he loved me, he would have stopped all that from happening.
Was it the stepfather who was the molester?
No, my stepfather was not the one who molested me. So you can see that by the age of 12, I've been hurt at the hands of several different people. Trust was a big issue for me. And I had asked Jesus to help me, to save me 4 different times. And yet my life continued down the path that it was. I ended up as a teenager pregnant at a very young age and made a decision to not go through with the pregnancy. And I can remember walking out of that abortion clinic and knowing 2 things. One, I would never tell another person about that day. And 2, I knew that if God was there, there was no way he could love me now. And that was actually a secret that I took to my grave, that I took with me right to the gates of heaven.
It's funny when you funny in a not a ha-ha way, but when you say, you know, when you say, you know, I took it to my grave, or when you say when I died, you don't hear that from a lot of people.
I really don't know how else to explain it. You know, I've had several people say, "Well, but you weren't pronounced dead." You're right, I wasn't. They did a code blue, which they were performing CPR, and the code shows that it lasted about 9 minutes. Had they not been there and nobody would have performed the code, then we would have just, you know, people would have said, you know, she died. But because I was brought back, you know, it goes in that gray area and, you know, some people aren't quite sure what to say. I just say died because I don't really know how else to explain it.
Is it that you were clinically dead, or are you using the word dead as a general expression that's not particularly scientifically based?
You know, Alan, I'm really not quite sure how to answer that because, you know, obviously there was no time of death pronounced. But yet my body was not functioning. My heart was not functioning on its own. I was absolutely not breathing on my own. And I wasn't in my body. So I don't quite know what else to call it.
Did the doctor say you were dead?
No, because they did not pronounce time of death. If doctors said I was dead, I wouldn't be here talking to you because they would have had to pronounce me dead. But because they brought me back, I was never pronounced dead. Does that make sense?
Sure. So, well, in your from your experience, you had gone to another place, and that place was heaven, a place one doesn't usually visit if one is ever lucky enough to go there until upon death. And it was 9 minutes that this occurred? It happened for 9 minutes?
Yes, sir. 9 minutes earthly time. But one of the very first things, I remember closing my eyes in the hospital room. I had an amazing sense of peace and tranquility wash over me, which is funny because my entire life I was always terrified of dying. And I can remember just this peace washing over me. And in a split second, I remember looking at my mom and I said, I love you. And I was gone. And I closed my eyes. My body went into respiratory arrest. But the moment that I closed my eyes, I opened them in this beautiful, I call it a tunnel, Alan, but, you know, it was almost like a tunnel of bright light, but yet the sides went on for eternity. Like there was, when we think tunnel, like I was standing in a tunnel, you think a dark, like train tunnel with a light at the end of it. And that's not what this was. This light radiated all around me. And it was the most beautiful white light that I could ever describe. In fact, our color white is a million times less than what I was experiencing.
Wow. We're talking with Crystal McVey. Chasing Heaven is her new book. I want to get up to, you know, your second chapter, meaning your second book here. But I want to still, for a moment here, discuss those 9 minutes. And you believe you met God. And when you say God, do you mean Jesus? Do you mean God? Do you mean the Father? What was the entity you came in contact with?
So I intertwine or interchange God and Jesus quite a bit. And I don't mean to confuse people when I do that. But I was raised a Christian, and this experience did not diminish my faith in my Christianity. It actually built it. And people will say, but you didn't see Jesus. And I said, but I did. You know, and my husband has a wonderful way of putting it. He talks about an egg. You know, if you hold an egg in your hand, you have one egg, but it's made up of three separate parts. And that was like the God that I was in front of. I remembered knowing that I was in front of the one true God. And immediately I fell to my face.
You fell to your face?
I fell straight to my face. I began to worship him. I had never experienced a love that like I was being bathed in with him. And, you know, I had two angels that were there with me. I remember being able to look at them and talk directly to them, but with no words. Communication there was so effortless and beautiful. And I also remember knowing that there was no time. So the 9 minutes that were happening on Earth, there was no rush in the place that I was. There was no seconds or minutes or hours. There was just this existence. And I laid on my face in front of him, and I worshiped him. And, you know, I tell people often, you know, we have 5 senses here. But there it was as if I had 100 different senses, 100 different ways that I could experience him. Like, I could physically feel his love. Whereas here we can't. Like, I could tell you, Alan, I love you. And you'd go, oh, okay, thank you. I mean, you don't physically feel it. But, you know,
how would you describe that feeling?
I physically feel the emotion.
How do you describe that feeling?
It's very hard to. And that was something that frustrated me so much when I did come back, was that I was trying to do justice and explain in earthly terms a very unearthly experience. It was very hard. Words have failed me.
What do you think was really happening here?
Well, I, of course, believe that, you know, that my spirit did leave my body. I believe that I stood at the gates of heaven. Now, I didn't see these big billowing gates, but I do remember at one point looking down the tunnel, and I knew that the end was extremely bright and vibrant. And I remember God saying to me, and remember, I wasn't walking with a man. I mean, when I say God, I was in his presence, and there was a communication from him directly to me the entire time. And I remember he told me, once we get there, you can't come back. And he showed me my children, gave me the option to come back to be their mom. I actually chose to stay with him. I mean, so much was transpiring between us. And I know that I chose to go with him, but in the end, he sent me back. Now, can I make you believe that that's what happened? No, but you'll never be able to make me believe that it isn't. And so that's what it pretty much comes down to. You know, the last thing he said to me when I was turning around, I heard my mom crying, and I said, she doesn't know that I'm okay. I said, can I just tell her I'm okay? And he said, the choice is up to you. And when I turned around to go find where my mom's voice was coming from, he said, tell them what you can remember. And I remember kind of thinking that was odd, because what did he mean, what I could remember? And I remember calling over my shoulder as I walked away. I said, I'll remember everything, and I'll be right back. And that was 6 years ago, and I don't remember everything. You know, he communicated with me nonstop for 9 minutes on our time, but I only remember 4 or 5 things that he actually said to me.
But what do you suspect were the other things that are not in your memory?
Right.
It's a crazy question, because if it's not in your memory, how do you tell me? But do you have a sense of what that other stuff is?
Well, here's what I do remember, Alan. I remember the moment I stood in this realm. I remember knowing a few things. One, right away, I knew exactly where I was. I knew who I was, which that doesn't sound like it's a big deal, but I knew that I was the spiritual form of me, the same me that had just died or was dying in that hospital room. I knew what was happening to me. Now, I didn't float above my body. I didn't see the hospital room, but I knew that they were trying to bring me back. And I was at such peace, I was just ready to continue. But also, all knowledge was downloaded. I don't know about you. Do you have questions that when you meet God, you'd like to ask him?
Oh, I'm sure. Well, I interviewed
okay,
for a living,
well,
so I'm sure.
I did. Yeah,
a couple
I did.
Of things I'd
yeah,
like
you're
to
an
know.
Interviewer. I'm sure you would do a really great interview with God. Well, I had some
He'd
questions.
He'd be a good guest.
He would be a good guest. I had a lot of questions. I wanted to know what kind of God he was. Because what kind of God allows children to be abused and doesn't step in to save them? What kind of God allows the kind of suffering that our world is even seeing today? I wanted to know why he didn't love me and where was he?
Did you get an answer to any of those questions, why a God would allow this kind of suffering?
Yes, I think I really do believe that I did. And I won't quote him because I don't remember specifically, you know, him answering. But I remember the moment that I became aware, you know, that I was still me. I remember just knowing. I had no questions because all knowledge in an instant was downloaded into my spirit. I mean, you could have asked me any question in that moment. I mean, anything like scientific, you know, I'm a school teacher and I teach third grade. But I couldn't sit here and talk to you about calculus or, you know, anything bigger than that. But in that moment, I could have answered.
But do you have an
anything.
Answer that you could share with the world about why children suffer? Why?
So this is what I did come away with all of that. You know, at the very end, when we got closer to the gates, there was a child standing there, and she was so different than, you know, anything I'd seen while I was there. She was completely human. She was playing. She was laughing. And I remember looking at her and being so in love with her. I mean, Alan, a love that I couldn't even describe, I mean, in words. I mean, even more so than I feel for my own children. And I remember as I looked at her, I remember saying out loud, I'm going to explode. I mean, even as a spirit, I just could not contain how much I loved her. And at one point, you know, I felt like God took that sensation away from me. And when I looked back down at her, I recognized her as me. And she was the 3-year-old me, the me that when the abuse began. And God showed me that he allowed me to see myself through his eyes. That might not seem like much to some people, but to a person who had wondered her entire life why he didn't love her and why he had abandoned her, that was everything. Because what he showed me was he loved me more than I could ever comprehend, and he had never left me. But
did
I
you understand
that
what
for every
we'll get
bad
an answer
thing
to why he
happened.
Allowed horrible
right.
things to happen to you.
Well, God has given humans the gift of free will. And if he steps in, Alan, and he takes that from us, then we would be nothing more than puppets. And so I wasn't hurt at the hands of God. I was hurt at the hands of humans. But yet I blamed God for it my entire life. And the truth was, is that he walked into it all, you know, with me, that he grieved over what had happened to me. And I'm not going to have all the answers. I just won't. But I can assure you that when we stand with him, you know, it just makes sense. And my human mind can't wrap around it. But my spiritual mind, you know, knew that he is good.
What was there a physical form that you could describe what you saw, what God looked like, or was it just light?
No, I just experienced a light, you know, just this beautiful golden light that just wrapped itself in front of me, around me. Communication was just like it was with the angels. Now, the angels I saw in like a physical type form. I say that, you know, the two angels that were there with me, they took on vaguely human-like shapes. I didn't see wings. But, you know, when you look at a light bulb that's turned on and you can see the silhouette of the bulb, but the light just glows, that's what I experienced with the angels. Communication, like I said, was just effortless. And, I mean, that's what I experienced. You know,
God was not it was not a physical form. It was a feeling.
Yes, I did not see him in a physical form, no.
Did you see or communicate with any dearly departed relatives or friends?
I didn't. And, you know, I didn't know that this kind of stuff really happened to people until I came back and I started talking about it. And somebody gave me the book 90 Minutes in Heaven with Don Piper. And he talked about the moment he died, he was right at the gate and all of his, you know, loved ones and friends that he had lost were right there. And I remember reading that going, oh, my gosh, it's just like the birthday party I had when I was five. You know, nobody showed up. You know, where were my friends? Where are my people? But then as I read through his book, you know, he was describing that entrance that at the end of my journey, you know, I was in the tunnel and I could see that bright entrance at the end. And the way Don described it was exactly what I was seeing. So it does bring me joy to know that when I get to that point, I do believe that they'll all be there waiting for me.
We're talking with Crystal McVeigh. Her new book is called Chasing Heaven. So after you wrote your first book and you got all the reaction to it, Waking Up in Heaven being the first book, and you went through, you know, living your life, I guess, in a very different way, what led to this new chapter, Chasing Heaven? What changes happened in you as a result of this?
Well, I came back to the very same life, but a completely different person. You know, the me before was, I hate to say it, you know, very selfish. I mean, I went to church my whole life, Alan, but that didn't make me a sweet, compassionate person. You know, I was very selfish, especially when it came to money. And so my husband came home shortly after my experience to find that all of our clothes in our closet and all of our shoes were bagged up because I was giving it all away. I think I left us one or two outfits. And I remember him just looking at me and saying, honey, we're going to need this. And I tried to give our house away. I tried to give our cars away. I know it sounds, you know, silly, but I hadn't taken any of that with me. And it didn't have a value to me like it did before. I wasn't sentimental about objects. And I began to care about the people that were around me, not just my husband and my family, but I began to care about the person who sat in front of the 7-Eleven, you know, that slept there at night. I began to care about the girls that went to work to sell their bodies. I mean, it was just, he changed me.
As a matter of fact, speaking of the girls who sell their bodies, you got involved in ministering to women in strip clubs. How did that come about? And this was a direct result of what you experienced during those 9 minutes.
Yes. And I can remember sitting up one night in the middle of the night, and I woke my husband up. I was so confused, and I had a dream, and I said, God wants me to go to minister to the girls in the clubs and to the homeless. And I said, we don't have any homeless, and we don't have any strip clubs. And so I had no idea how I was supposed to do this, but my heart was on fire for these two types of ministry. But I had no idea how to go about it. And slowly, over the next year or so, I began to be introduced to people. And I ended up traveling about 3 hours away from where I live, and I joined a ministry that had already been formed that goes into the clubs. And what I loved about that ministry because when God had told me this was what I was going to do, I didn't know that people actually
did it. Did he tell you this after the fact, after your, I hate to use the word death, but I guess that's how you experience it. After the 9 minutes, this is when you, after you came back, you got this message.
Yes, sir. And so I started going with this group, and what I saw was, you know, here I had longed for heaven from the moment I got back. I had longed for God, and I would cry at night because I didn't know where to find him. And Alan, I didn't want to be here anymore. You know, I was mad. I had chosen to stay with him, but I have four kids that I adore, and so I felt torn between both worlds. I wanted to be here with them and my husband, of course. And it wasn't until I started following into these ministries that longing for heaven began to be fulfilled. Because, you know, one of the things that God did show me in heaven, Alan, was not only that he loves us, but that he is love. And so when we experience love on this earth, we are experiencing God. And I began to go into these places that I would never have thought I would ever find Christ in. And yet I would sit there with my sisters, and there he was. You know, I mean, because of the love that we were experiencing together. And the same thing with our homeless ministry, you know, to sit under a bridge and worship became my favorite church. I didn't find God in 33 years, truly find him in all of these big, beautiful church buildings that I went to. But yet I ended up, after my death, finding him in the dirt, under a bridge, with the homeless community. And it became my favorite church.
That's a very interesting question. By the way, Crystal McVeigh is with us. Her new book, it's called Chasing Heaven. When you talk about heaven as being a separate place, a place you go to, perhaps if you're lucky, when you die, in another world, in some other place, is it possible that this all exists along with God, not anywhere else other than in our own minds?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm not a theologian, and I can't really debate any of that. What I can tell you is that my spirit left my physical body and was not present on what we know as Earth. Now, I call it another place. I would be more inclined to describe it as perhaps another dimension, because obviously if I left my physical body, you know, obviously I couldn't say that I'm still here walking this earth. I mean, it was a distinct and definite separate place.
Do you forward to dying?
I do feel that we experience him here. And I know that he showed me that. He's not sitting somewhere just waiting for us to come to him. He is here.
Do you look forward to the day when you die for good?
Yes. And I know that sounds horrible. I hope I live to be 100 years old, Alan. I really do. I hope I get to watch my children grow, and I can't wait to see what they become and what they do with their lives. And I hope I'm a great-great-grandmother before I go. But I will tell you this. If I went tonight, I would want you to stand up and say, you know what? Today was the best day of her life. I mean, the day that I go back to that place will truly be the best day of my life.
How did this change your relationships? How did it change your marriage, your relationship with your children? Did you have a different kind, or do you now have a different kind of relationship with your loved ones than you had prior to this experience?
Yes, very much so. I'm much more forgiving than I used to be. I used to hold a grudge. I mean, if you took my pencil in kindergarten, I remembered it when I was 33. You know, I held grudges. It was very hard for me to forgive, very hard for me to ask for forgiveness. I portrayed myself one way in church and then a completely different way coming home. You know, I had a very foul mouth. There's so many ways. I was selfish with our money. I wasn't this horrible person. I mean, I really wasn't, but I just had a lot of things wrong. I think forgiveness is the number one thing. You know, people have asked me, you know, how could you forgive the person who had hurt you so badly? And I said, you know, because I stood with the one who forgave me. And when I say in my book that I broke all 10 commandments, I mean, Alan, I broke all 10 commandments, you know, even thou shalt not kill. And yet when I asked for forgiveness, there it was. And
when you say kill, you killed someone. Is that, are you referring to the abortion you had?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. I wonder also if, as a result of your first book, and now you've got your second one, Chasing Heaven, did you get a lot of haters who said, oh, yes, this woman's crazy, this woman's nuts? Did you have to deal with the negativity as a result of coming forward with some very difficult and personal experiences?
Yes, sir. In fact, I write in our new book, in the new book, Chasing Heaven, I write a chapter called Do It Fat, Do It Scared. And I talk about the day that our first book launched. I went on a national television show. I mean, scared to death. And here, not only am I talking about dying and going to heaven, but I'm also having to open up in this book and talk about secrets that I had kept my entire life. And I remember getting done and getting back to the hotel in New York City. And not that I wasn't reading anything online. Like, people actually went out of their way to email me personally to let me know, how fat I was, or, or that I was a liar. And a lot of the things were about my physical appearance. And then even so far as comments, people were, if I was your kids, I would kill myself, things like that. So then I began to get really upset, because not only did I step out and this was coming at me, but it was also being directed towards my kids. And I can remember crying in the hotel room that day in New York City and saying, God, why? Why would you ask me to do this? And, he comforted me. I felt his presence. I knew that he was comforting me. And the last thing I wanted to do that night was go and do another interview. But I had said that I would go on this radio show, the Alan Colmes radio show.
Oh, no, not that.
I know. And I remember, Alan, I remember going to your studio, and I remember I had been beaten up all day. I mean, by believers and non-believers, because some believers will say, that's not biblical what you're saying. You're lying. Well, I'm not lying. But, like I said, I can't make people believe. But I went to your show, and I remember sitting there with you, and right before the show started, you in jest with a smile, and I did know that you were joking, but you said, are you going to be one of the Christians that tells me I'm going to hell? And here I had been beaten up all day, so my heart broke. Like, why would somebody ever tell you that, Alan?
And you're thinking, who's this jerk, right?
I didn't think, no, I felt so sorry. If anybody had ever made you feel that you were less than in any way. And I remember looking at you and I said, and I started getting teary because here I'd cried all day. And I said, why would somebody say that to you? And you said, well, because I'm Jewish. Now, I didn't know what to say. I mean, nobody ever prepared me for how to answer, questions. And I remember just looking at you and I said, my Savior was a Jew. And you said, well, actually, I'm more agnostic. And I have no idea what that means. And so I said, well, I was raised mostly Methodist. What denomination is agnostic? And you kind of giggled, and you told me, well, it means I just, you have questions. I'm not quite sure. Well, I totally get that. I totally get that. And here was my other thing, Alan, is if you did have questions and you express them to people that you knew that were Christians, did you get good support, or were you made to feel that because you had questions that you were going to go to hell? That was what was going through my mind. And all I wanted to do was hug you and say, he loves us. He just loves us, man.
Well, it sounds like you've learned what you went through. And it's so interesting because I've interviewed a number of people who've gone through what's called the
near death
the near-death experience,
mm-hmm.
Including Raymond Moody, who wrote the first book on this back in, the 1980s or 70s. And so many people have similar experiences having seen a light, of having a sense of peace, and coming back in a very, very different, much more healthy mindset.
Right.
So what the experience you're talking about is very consistent with other people who have had similar experiences.
And isn't that interesting? I had never read anybody else's experience until after I got back. And, when you feel like, I could talk about it with my husband and my family, but it would almost be like if you were talking about your trip to Africa and I didn't even know what Africa was or where it was. You know what I mean? Like, but to talk about somebody with somebody that's been there, experienced it. And so I started reading the books, and the first one I read, of course, was Don Piper's. And there were so many similarities. You know, he was gone for 90 minutes and I was gone for 9, yet we both had so much happen in that same time frame. I find it interesting that you look at some of the top heaven stories that are, maybe are more notable. Heaven is for real, and you have Eben Alexander, the proof of heaven. So you have a pastor's little boy, a 3-year-old, in Heaven is for Real. You have a neurosurgeon in Proof of Heaven. Mary Neal, you have an orthopedic doctor. And then you have Waking Up in Heaven, this school teacher in the middle of nowhere. And yet none of us had ever gotten together and talked. But yet we all account such similar experiences.
Did you get the sense, or do you feel that Christianity is the only way, Jesus is the only way? Or do you have more of a sense that, well, that may be your way, but other people may find their own path in a totally different experience?
Well, and here's what I will say to that is that, you know, I was raised to believe in Christ as my Savior. I read, who was it, O'Reilly that wrote the Killing Jesus?
Bill O'Reilly, sure.
Oh, my gosh. And whether, regardless of, you know, what people, their opinion, that book was amazing. I mean, Jesus Christ was real. He was a real man that walked this earth. There's proof of his existence. And I know that I stood in front of God, and I say that I stood in front of the presence of Jesus. I will never turn my back from that. And so here's what I want people to know. I want them to know more of what I stand for than what I stand against. I do believe that Jesus Christ was crucified on that cross, and he paid the debt for all of our sins. Now, what you do with that is between you and him. What I want you to know is that there is a heaven, there is a God, there was a Jesus, and I don't want you to want a relationship with him because you're afraid of going to hell. I want you to want a relationship with him because you're excited about maybe going to heaven.
What I'm asking, though, is, I mean, there are other people who may believe that the way is not through Jesus, like Jews who don't believe in Jesus as a deity. There might be people who believe in Muhammad or believe in Buddha or have other deities who they revere. And do you see it those as acceptable and logical paths maybe to the same place?
You know, I think that perhaps we call God by very different names. I call him Jesus. I call him God. Your relationship with him is completely personal between the two of you. I really don't want to put God in a box. And here's what's going to happen, Alan. I could answer your question one of two ways. I could say, yes, 100%, Jesus Christ is the only way. And many Christians would stand up and applaud and say, yes, that's it. Or I could say, Alan, I'm not sure that Jesus is the only way. He was my way. And many will stand up and say that I'm blaspheming, that that's not the truth. And so here's what I can tell you. I offer people to look into who he is and who he was. And I can tell you without a shadow of a doubt that he is real and that God is real. I don't think that we should put God in the box. I'm not going to do that, and I'm not going to speak on his behalf. The Bible that I read, you know, Jesus is not a liar, and God is not a liar. And so I do believe in Christ, and I do believe in what he did for me. But I want to be careful, not that I'm afraid to, that I'm turning from Christ, because if you know me, you know how much I love him.
Sure.
But I have to be careful with how I do really answer that. And this is just me personally. Listen, I'm going to get so many opinions for how I'm answering your question. Because the last thing I want to do is turn away my sister that's a Muslim, or my friends that don't believe at all, my friends that aren't sure what they believe. I don't want to turn you away. I want you to be in my life, and I want to love you, and we can figure it all out together. So we just have to
figure
really
it out till we're in a different place.
How we portray that.
May be the case. If ever.
Yeah, and you know, here's my greatest wish is I want to tell you about the God that I met and that I love and the Jesus that I love. When you read about him, Alan, you know, you read about Christ in the New Testament, and I mean, all you're going to come away with is how loving he was. And I don't know much about other religions, but as far as I know, there wasn't another one that died for me. So how could I not choose to follow the one that says that he died for me, knowing who I was going to become? Maybe those that have the biggest price to pay are the ones that are the most thankful for the one who paid it.
On that note, and
that's me.
A fascinating note. I thank you so much once again, Crystal. Crystal McVeigh, and the book is Chasing Heaven. And as always, I'm delighted to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you, friend. I love getting to talk with you.
This is Heal Planet. I'm Alan Combs.